Welcome to another episode of Out of the Woodwork podcast, brought to you by Axminster Tools with me, Sean Evely. Today, I'll be talking to Chris Fisher, also known as the Blind Woodturner. Chris's incredible story saw him discover a passion for woodturning after losing his sight in 2008. After pulling himself from a spiraling depression, Chris is an avid horror fan and wanted to make a wooden vampire stake, and decided woodturning was the only way. And he wasn't going to let his disability stop him. Part of Chris's mission is to exceed the expectations of what others perceive disabled people are able to accomplish, and to prove himself and the world that having a disability isn't the end, and it's just the beginning. Chris now shares his passion for woodturning with others, offering demonstrations and tuition, and his widely acclaimed artistic pieces are highly sought after. Hello, Chris. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Hello, how are you?
I'm really good. I'm fascinated by your story and I can't wait to learn more about you. And I know our audience is really keen to find out more as well. So thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
No, it's our pleasure. Always is. When Axminster's involved, we love hanging out with you guys. So no worries there.
I know Axminster was a big part of your journey, so we'll definitely talk more about that later. But for people that don't know about you, can you give us a brief background on you and your story?
Yes, I went blind at the age of 38, went blind overnight, really. Woke up severely visually impaired one morning, 4 weeks later, totally blind, no vision. And after 4 or 5 years of debilitating anxiety and some really sketchy moments, I taught myself woodturning just by listening to YouTube and bought a lathe and just taught myself by touch and mental imagery. And now I'm the country's only totally blind, full-time woodturning professional. That's also the first one to pass the accreditation for the Register of Professional Turners.
Oh, wow. So were you creative before you went blind, or was it a passion you found after?
No, I've always been creative and love working with my hands. And I did really well at school academically. And my brother went on to be an architect. And my father was a great engineer and a great artist, but I never really wanted a desk job.
Yeah.
So I left school and was a crankshaft engineer. And I've always worked with my hands since that time. And really going blind was a different sensation, of course, but it wasn't such a huge leap of faith technically, because I'd had years of experience in engineering and working for BMW as well, doing body work and car restoration. So very comfortable around tools and machinery, and it worked in my favour, that resume, really. And yeah, woodturning blind is, of course, hugely dangerous, but that's part of the allure as well for me. I love pushing the envelope, and there's that saying, if you're not living on the edge, you're taking up too much room.
Yeah.
So that always keeps my interest peaked as well, the challenge.
Yeah. Well, talking about danger, I'm aware that you're a big horror fan. Mm. And the reason you got into woodturning was because you wanted to make a vampire stake.
Yeah, true.
Was it 100% woodturning? Did you not think of any other way to make the vampire stake or any other craft you wanted to try?
No, straight away. I wanted the vampire stake out of wood, and I could see the pictures of Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee in the classic Hammer horror films about Dracula. And yeah, it had to be wood, but I didn't just want to whittle the end. I thought, no, I can do something a bit more, again, challenging than that. So immediately I thought of woodturning, but I'd never attended a wood turning seminar, didn't do it at school. That had been phased out a decade or so before I got to high school, wood turning.
Yeah.
I thought, no, I've got to get a lathe and I've got to learn wood turning, but where do I go? Who do I talk to? I'm housebound pretty much because of being blind. So I turned to YouTube and I used that as a schoolroom and was very, very serious about it. And when everyone had gone to school or work and the house was empty, I'd get my laptop on, and with it being assistive technology, my laptop had a screen reader on so I could access the internet and YouTube. And I was listening to all these tutorials on YouTube, but straight from the get-go, I made sure that I listened to people that I considered very, very skilled and would teach me the right way. So I was listening to quite a few woodturners in the early days, and many of them still remain friends. So yeah, 600 hours later, just bought the lathe and taught myself.
Yeah, well, I'm sure a lot of it was self-taught. I know you teach some blind students, and I'm not sure if you had any training. Has anyone said, no, I can't teach you because you're blind?
No, no one said that. I suppose in this day and age, they shouldn't really say that, you know, with discrimination and equality and everything. But I guess that from a sighted wood-turning professional, I'm sure they would be, well, let's weigh this up really very quickly. And, you know, because it's very challenging to teach a blind person something like that. But everyone was so helpful and giving me hints and tips and doing videos with extra voiceovers and narration to help me build up a better mental picture. So I teach the blind now, but I'm living the dream. So I get what they might be anxious about. And my hearing is so tuned in now with wood turning that I can tell within a millisecond as to how their progress is. And even if their breathing changes, I can tell if they're feeling a bit anxious. So if their breathing changes and I've heard a little bit of a catch, I'll say, right, let's just stop, because I've heard something catch there and I can hear that your breathing's changed. So let's just analyze what's happened and dissect it, and then we can move on. So it's all little things like that that I'm reacting to. But it's really, really great to be paying it forward in some way, helping the disabled. But I have able-bodied students as well. Yeah, I've taught, in fact, I've had last week and the week before two different blind students. So that was amazing to give them their introductory wood turning lesson. So lesson number one, the basics. And yeah, they loved it.
Yeah. And talking about mental illness and teaching other people, you know, with disabilities how to wood turn, can you talk to us a bit more about the Men Shed Association and the charter that was just signed? Because I know you're a big part of that.
Yeah, well, having suffered with debilitating mental illness that nearly ended in my suicide, and, you know, you must keep that in because it's a big part of the story.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not ashamed to talk about it because these things happen. After surviving that anxiety, I know what it's like to be dealing with mental illness. And when the question was asked, would you like to be the patron of UK Men's Sheds Association, which really helps people from all backgrounds and all walks of life that are struggling with their mental health to have a creative outlet and somewhere to talk and form new friendships and have that social network and people they can confide in. That's great therapy. But also the great thing about being a wood turner is the craft and the art form itself is great therapy. And whilst you're at your lathe, or no matter what your discipline is, but I'll talk about wood turning, when I'm at my lathe and you're in the zone, you're in the moment, and my brain's thinking of designs and, you know, maybe some carving and texture and colours, you don't think about anything else. And even if it's something as little as, oh, the car needs a service, or my son's feeling a bit unwell, or no matter what it is, you do not have any connection with those negative thoughts when you're being creative. It's great, great therapy. And UK Men's Sheds Association offer places and workspaces that people can realise that. And it's great. And a lot of the members suffer with depression, anxiety, bereavement, loneliness. And the charter that was just signed at the Houses of Parliament, which Nicola and I and my guide dog Bamba attended alongside many other people from UK Men's Shed. And it's really important to get the message out there that being creative and crafting and DIY really can change and save lives. It did for me. And there's over 600, probably nearly 700 sheds now, workspaces and garages around the country, allowing people to access tools and equipment and machinery and materials, great advice, tea and coffee and cakes to help them get through the day and realize that it needn't be the end, depression or anxiety. The important thing is you get help, you recognize the signs, and you've got someone to talk to. It's really important.
Yeah. And you said that if you get a disability, let's say you're not born with it, it's not the end, it's actually just the beginning. And I can see how the Men's Shed Association can really unlock potential for people that are struggling.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's not the end. A lot of people think it might be. And that's a good time when you start that spiral downwards. That's when you need to start talking. But for me, it was a rebirth. It was a reinvention. We've said it was a post-traumatic awakening for me. And it's given me this amazing community of friends, of knowledge, of income, of happiness. And my life has changed beyond belief. And if someone would have said to me those first couple of years being blind that you're going to be a professional wood turner and have all these amazing friends in your life, I'd have said, well, that's impossible. But it isn't. And you've got to believe that anything truly is possible.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's certainly saved me in more ways than I can think about.
Well, it sounds like you have more friends than me, so maybe I should join the mentorship. So one thing I'm sure a lot of people are curious about is how your turning is different to someone with sight. What do you do differently?
Well, I try to emulate the sighted turners as best I can, and I did teach myself turning with traditional tools, although I do use carbide tools when I'm trying to catch up and claw back a bit of time. But I like to think I'm doing pretty much the same as what a sighted turner would. My work in itself differs because it's becoming more and more abstract and tactile and sensory and carved. And Colwyn, that was trained as a production turner and spent years as an apprentice, could turn out a batch of spindles, you know, and they'll all be perfect replicas of each other. I could never do that. Well, I'm not saying I couldn't ever do that, but it would take me such a long time.
Yeah.
If someone commissioned a set of stair spindles off me, it would take such a long time. The cost would be prohibitive. I'd say, right, well, how fast do you want them? And they say, well, can we have them in 3 weeks? I'll say, well, can you add, you know, another 6 months onto that, and I'll get them done. I have to start, stop, feel, and I have to be incredibly safe. I'd like to say I could do it, but I'd leave that to the sighted master turners. Yeah, my strengths now lie in wood turning art, and it's continuing to evolve.
Well, I know a lot of your work is very tactile, and you like adding carvings on. Is that something because it helps you visualise what you're doing?
Yeah, it helps me visualise, but also, and I don't want to ostracise myself against a lot of the traditional wood turners, but let's use the term that everyone knows, round and brown. If I did, like I did in the early days, every bowl that I did was round and brown, and that was great learning techniques and form and shape and safety. But now it doesn't do anything to me. And people say, how can you do that, Chris? It's got some beautiful grain and figuring in that piece of wood. Well, hello, I can't see that. So it's my work. Yeah. What's the point of me turning half a dozen similar sized bowls and not doing anything with them apart from turning them and finishing them? They'll all feel the same, give or take. Whereas I carve it and texture it one of a few different ways, and that piece comes alive to me. It becomes a sensory form, and as I'm touching it, my brain can see this shape come alive, whereas just a smooth round bowl, it's pretty boring for me. And there are certain woods that I wouldn't dare texture or colour, you know, a beautiful burr and things like that. I'm not a maniac, and I'd never hear the end of it. But for the most part, I treat wood as a canvas now. So, yeah, I'm sorry if I offend any of your listeners saying that. But, yeah, when you can't see the inherent beauty of the wood, I have to work to a different discipline in a way. Otherwise, it'd lose all its interest.
Yeah, I think art pieces that are tactile are definitely more special. People love touching things. But you also add colour to your work. So I'm interested on how you colour things, and especially if you're adding two tones. And that must be so difficult to like have a gradient or just, you know, and I can see and I find that difficult. So how do you do it?
This is luckily where working in the motor industry and understanding paints and how colours work and how to mix colours and blending and feathering, that plays right into my wheelhouse. And because I was sighted for nearly 40 years, I've got a memory map. That is my my memory map is my go-to reference, like it is for anybody when you're trying to remember something. But I get it as a more crisp picture in my mind now, as opposed to a pure memory. But it's, again, it's the challenge. But yeah, just because I can't see it doesn't mean that I shouldn't attempt it or do it, because it's a lot of fun trying to mix them colours. And I love being presented with the problem and working the problem and coming up with a solution. And it's really weird that sometimes when I've done a coloured effect or used a new product, and if Nicola's out with a client or at a meeting, I've got to wait a whole day for her to get home. And I say, you know, what I've done, has it worked? And, yeah, you know, she'll say, yeah, yeah, it looks fantastic. And I'll say, right, brilliant. And then it's locked down into my memory. So that the colours that I'd used and the technique, I will never deviate from that again.
Yeah, because you know it works.
I know it works, yeah, if it ain't broke.
Yeah.
You know, so there's that. And again, the people that buy my work and the gallery where I exhibit, my most prolific selling items are the very abstract, very textured, very coloured ones. And the gallery where I am, if I took in a round and brown bowl, it'd say, you know, I don't want that piece.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, it's a challenge. It's a lot of fun, and just blending and feathering things in. I'm just going on autopilot.
Yeah.
Alongside with the mental imagery and trying to remember what I was taught in the automotive industry. And so far it's paid dividends.
Yeah.
You know, you have to go with your instincts. And ultimately, with art being an expressive form, really you can't get it wrong. There'll be those that look at it subjectively and say, don't like that, but I like that. And that's what art's about. You're not going to please everybody. But as long as you stay true to your heart and your soul, I think ultimately you've done what needed to be done with it.
Yeah, so the type of work you do now, is it all your own designs, one-off pieces, or do you get briefs from the client of what they're looking for?
Well, if it's a commission, I will get a brief. I've just finished yesterday a 4-foot-tall candle stand for one of the local churches here in the Derbyshire Dales to celebrate their 150th year. And also it's going to hold the Paschal candle, which is a huge candle for Easter. So we went and had a meeting with the trustees, and they said they wanted it 4 feet tall. And as far as the design went, they left that down to me. We did have a discussion where the guy that paid for the church to be built owned the foundry that made the steelwork for St. Pancras Station in London. So I said, you know, there are techniques where I could make it look patinaed and rusty, you know, to tie into that industrial heritage that the benefactor was part of. And they went, no, we don't. We want it modern and contemporary. And they'd seen my work in the gallery and were absolutely blown away by what I'd made. And that's why they got in touch. You know, we've got to have Chris do our candle stand. And there was no mention of it being, well, you know, you're blind, and it's not a sympathy vote at all. It was my work that spoke for itself. And I went with a sort of like a pastoral palette. Living in the Derbyshire countryside, we're just surrounded by pasture and fields and water and brooks and streams. So it taps into those colours, but they've been blended and harmonised. And then I've airbrushed a patchwork of almost like lightning strikes, but lines over the whole thing to emulate the country lanes that crisscross a rural environment. So Nicola said it's amazing, and Matthew, that owns a gallery where I exhibit, he said it's one of the most beautiful things he's ever seen.
Yeah, well, I've seen it on your Instagram.
Oh, right, yeah.
I highly recommend people checking out your Instagram.
Mm. This candle stand project has had a series of videos uploaded because the church trustee says, oh, yeah, upload progress videos because we'd love to see how it's coming on.
Yeah.
Luckily, I didn't get a call saying, stop, what are you doing? You know, it's horrendous. Yeah. So yeah, Instagram's a great way for me to show people what I'm up to. And
yeah, but it's really good that you're documenting the build as it's going along.
Mm.
And with the YouTube channel, at what point in your turning journey did you start the YouTube channel?
Let's just think now. Probably about 6 months after started Wood Turning. With hindsight, pun intended, I should have started right from the very first day.
Okay.
But I didn't. But it would have been interesting for people to see how I solved the problems that were presented early in my journey. But yeah, it started quite early, and that was to share the journey. But the core message of all my videos has always been to inspire and motivate people. That's why I did it, and that's why we're still doing it. And Nicola says, you know, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it properly and reach as many people as we can.
Yeah.
So yeah, YouTube is a lot of fun, and Instagram's a lot of fun, and I do TikTok as well now. I like TikTok.
Yeah. But
yeah, it's just sharing what I'm doing, and hopefully people are enjoying it.
Yeah, Instagram is, I think, definitely better for the craft community because it's very visual.
Mm.
And it seems like all the makers on Instagram showing their processes, and everyone can communicate and, you know, build friendships. See, even if you never get to meet the people, it's amazing the people you're talking to around the whole world about what you're doing.
Yeah, that's absolutely right again. And you've got this community, this worldwide community of people that you may never meet, but they're always there. And they say, well, that's great, Chris. That looks amazing and well done, pal. And I reciprocate as often as I can. The area where I struggle is if someone's done a video and it's just got a music soundtrack, I'm thinking, well, that's telling me nothing. So I'll give it a like, to be polite and courteous and give them my support. But I wish some people would do more videos where they do a bit of explanation. There's a lot of videos out there where it's just music.
Yeah.
But yeah, great community in all the shows. And we're a big family, really, and we all get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, just magical times for me.
I don't know any other industry that sort of has the community like the maker community. So with the YouTube channel, a lot of people will be wondering how that actually works and how you film the videos, because I know you film them yourself.
Mm.
And I think, right, for anyone that doesn't know, they're going to be puzzled. So can you explain your process on how you film each video?
Right. Well, there are examples out there as well that are on film that you will show me doing it. But I quickly learned that being in the workshop on my own didn't give me the opportunity always to just shout and ask for help. And I wanted to be doing my own videos. Again, it's that little bit of independence back. So I was wondering how I could frame the shots up accurately. So again, it's that challenge. You've got a problem. How do I work the problem? How do I solve it? And then I thought of how bricklayers use a brick line, a brick, you know, a string line pulled taut, and they can lay a course of bricks very accurately. So I did a couple of test runs where I would get the camera and get it on the tripod approximately at face height. And then I attached some string to the top of the camera and I pulled it taut to my chin, recorded a scene, asked someone if it had worked, and they went, well, flipping heck, yes, it has. So I thought, right, well, you can't argue with mathematics and geometry, can you? So that's what I do. I either pull the string taut to my face for a face-to-camera piece, or I will angle the camera or my phone. It works the same with my phone. Pull the string taut, so whether or not it's to my face or to my hands or to the headstock on the lathe, it works. And my camera, my video camera, luckily it has a remote control and it beeps when I hit record and beeps when I hit pause. So that's great. And my phone is set up to be accessible for the blind, so everything is done through dictation and speech to text for when I'm adding a caption or a description. So it may sound complicated, but after getting your head around it, again, I can line up a shot, record it, film it and upload it in no time at all. So that's that demystified. I use a bit of string and assistive technology, but it works. And yeah, there are some videos. When Google flew out last year and made a film about Nicola and I, there is a bit of footage on that video itself. You know, it shows him pulling the string and things. There are other videos on my own YouTube channel that show me doing it. And in fact, recently on Instagram, I did a Tormek sharpening video and I'm pulling the strings. So yeah, I do it all myself. But again, I've got that little bit of independence. It makes me feel good and proud to be attempting these things myself. And anyone out there with a visual impairment or blindness or any other disability, you can work it out. There is a solution. There's an answer to everything.
Yeah.
I haven't got all the answers, but I think it's a lot of fun trying to work around the problem.
Out of the Woodwork is brought to you by Axminster Tools. Nobody is more passionate or knowledgeable about woodworking than us. A market leader in mail order tools and the machinery industry, we offer a friendly and personal service to thousands of woodworkers all around the world. Whether you're a trade professional, business owner, education leader, amateur DIYer, or a hobby enthusiast, we share your passion. Discover more about Axminster Tools, visit www.axminstertools.com.
Well, on your YouTube channel, you show yourself obviously wood turning, but you seem fearless and you've shown you're using a chainsaw, a panel saw, and you've dabbled in a bit of welding.
Yeah.
Is there a tool that you will not touch? There must be
scroll
a limit.
Saw.
A scroll saw, why is that?
Well, I know that as the guys, the scroll saw artists and people doing amazing fret work, they're steering this piece of wood around very close to this blade. And I just know that if I was let loose on a scroll saw, I would be in casualty that same day. No two ways about it. I'd end up out hurting myself.
Yeah.
Because it's not like I'm using a bandsaw and I can use a push stick, or it's the
curves.
It's the curves and the movement, you know, straight lines with a blade I can deal with, but the fact that you're having to steer and draw not only hugely dangerous for me, but I think very complex, the fact that I couldn't follow an outline of a sketch I've done on a piece of wood to get a piece of artwork done. So yeah, there's that. I really wouldn't ever use a scroll saw, but apart from that, I'd have a go at anything, I think.
Yeah, so you do a bit of welding. What do you make?
Well, I've not done welding for a long time. It's something I need to get back into, obviously with moving home and things like that. My MIG welder's in the workshop, not been touched for a while, but yeah, I was learning how to get some welds down on steel. And you think wood turning blind, sketchy, flipping heck, welding with no eyesight, that's really bizarre. Because
I can imagine
it's coming out at a gazillion degrees, this welding wire, and it's blistering hot. So I can't touch where I've been because it's ferociously hot. So I can't follow a finger, and I just put the welding tip where I think it needs to go, and then just it's on a wing and a prayer and try to pull a bead of weld. And yeah, but I did. I made a really good stool.
Did you wind turn the top?
No, I power carved that with an Arbitech turbo plane.
Yeah.
But yeah, welding's a lot of fun. I should do more. But yeah, it's very difficult. Yeah, that's going to take a lot more practice.
Yeah. Well, outside of wood turning, do you have any other passions or hobbies you love to do?
Love music, love audio books. I used to do a lot of clay pigeon shooting and air rifles. So I've still got an air rifle. So I'm trying to make my own acoustic scope.
Going back to wood turning, you also enjoy doing demonstrations.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best place a demonstration has taken you? Where's the best place you demonstrated?
Well, it's allowed Nicola and I to travel the entire country. And to pin it down to one great location or event would be difficult. The big events are amazing. I've turned at Maker Central as part of the Axminster entourage and turned alongside Colwyn and Jason, and Phil Irons has been there demonstrating stuff. So they're great events and they do hold a special place because that is the one time where you get to meet these people from all over the world that have travelled in, and you can meet in the bar at night and have a drink and share stories and have a laugh. So I suppose it would be the big events, I'd say, because you're just ticking all the boxes. You're able to meet friends. You're able to do your demos and share your story and inspire people, which in turn, hopefully, and it has happened, people have seen me demo at the big shows and then driven straight past an Axminster store and bought a new lathe on the way home and things like that. So that's important. But all right, if I've got to pick one, it'll be Maker's Central.
Okay, well, Maker's Central is such a great event. I remember watching your demonstration there. Mm. Has there ever been, I know you're very skilled, so I imagine not, but have you ever had any injuries while being on stage?
No injuries. Like everybody else, you'll get the odd catch and things like that, but no injuries. And because I have to be overly safe and not complacent with anything, I've not had any injuries at all with turning, and I have very few, let's call them moments. Now, in the early days, I had a lot, but that was just being unskilled and new to it, and things were coming off the lathe and catches every few seconds. But now if something goes a bit astray, I know why it has, and I can correct that and carry on. It's all part and parcel of using very powerful, fast machinery with no eyesight. And even sighted turners have catches.
Yeah.
I just analyze it. What happened? I know why it happened. Let's carry on. And it's that never giving up. But no injuries. Start, stop, feel. I don't even like moving the tool rest around with the lathe still on.
Yeah.
I'd end up just clanging the tool rest into the work and putting a big gouge or scratch in it and then having to turn that out or sand it off. So I don't even like moving the tool rest with the lathe running. And most sighted wood turners do that, and that's fine. If I was sighted, I'd do that. The production turners, if they've got their work on and they can just back it off, if it's on steb centres, they'll back it off on the tailstock, take one piece of wood out, put another one back in, and they've not even turned the lathe off. It's incredible.
Yeah, I've seen that. I don't know how that works.
Yeah, they're swapping pieces of wood out, and it's just incredible. But no, I couldn't dare do that. So that's why I've remained safe to this day. And that's what I instill, you know, in anyone that's here having a lesson. With being a registered professional turner as well, not only does it work for me day to day, but it works great for my students, and they can feel confident knowing that they're coming to a place where ultimately it's all about having fun and learning a new skill, but you know, going away at the end of the day with no problems. So it's really important.
One thing I found really interesting is obviously from your seeing wood turning as through a different perspective, and since doing it, you've even come up with a tool that you partnered with Axminster, which is the chuck size finder. How did that idea come about? Because even for sighted people, that is such a time saver.
Yeah, the speed sizer, I think you're referring to, isn't it, Sean? Necessity is the mother of all invention. So early on in wood turning, you're thinking of, you know, the correct ways to mount your bowl onto the lathe, and a chuck is pretty much an essential accessory for most wood turners. So marking either the tenon on the bottom of a bowl or a mortise was time consuming, fiddly, and in the beginning nigh on impossible. So I knew that highly skilled wood turners use a pair of dividers and line it up and then we'll do a scratch. I tried that once and nearly killed myself, so I said, I'm not doing that again. And tape measures, fiddly, you know, I could be, even though I've got a talking tape measure, I could be about to line it up and then all fingers and thumbs and then it'll move offline. So initially I came up with a wooden disc that was held in place by the tail centre, and the wooden disc corresponded to the optimum size for gripping the work on the chuck. So I would just hold a bradawl on the outside, spin the work up, and it would score a line, which was great. But then I had this moment of eureka and thought, well, what if I could make this look a bit more prim and proper and a bit more professional? And then I also started thinking about multiple jaw sets that people have for different types of work holding. So I got the lid off a Pringles tub and drilled a series of different holes in, which I had predetermined by some fiddly measuring and working out and measuring my jaws and chucks. And then that worked. It was proof of concept, this Pringle lid. And then it was allowing me to mark mortises and tenons time and time again, quickly, safely, and accurately. So I had a friend make an aluminium prototype, and it was at Maker Central, actually, when I was working alongside Colwyn. And I said, I'm sure you get asked to have a look at this amazing revolutionary thing that is going to change the world of wood turning. But I showed it Colwyn and explained what it was all about. And he said, that's genius. And again, even if you're a sighted wood turner, if you could be a rookie and new to it and struggle with the whole measuring, because it's really important you get the right size, because if the chucks aren't gripping the work properly, you know, that piece is going to make a bid for freedom sooner or later. And some people just have their jaws expanded way too much or gone that small that they're not gripping at all. So it was a safety thing as well. And once Colwyn and say, I really, really like that, we arranged to have a chat with Tim Stiles, who's, you know, product development really within the Axminster group. And he loved it. And they said, yeah, well, we can tweak it. And obviously, with me being a fan of all things Axminster and having Axminster chucks and jaws, we made really a speed sizer that was compatible with all the common Axminster jaw sizes. But also, there's not only are there the holes drilled on it and they're lettered A, B, C, D, etc. for the Axminster chucks, there's a series of holes drilled vertically in 10mm increments. So it doesn't matter if you own another brand of chuck and jaw combo, there's got to be a hole on there, even one drill for Axminster chucks. There's got to be a hole on that that is pretty bang on, give or take a millimetre or two, for your chuck set. So, yeah, it's been a really good, interesting exercise. And as far as I'm aware, it's been, you know, a very popular seller. And I did a video on TikTok probably about a month ago about the speed sizer, and that's had 81,000 views.
Yeah.
You know, so it's still getting a lot of interest, the speed sizer. And yeah, I've had messages from disabled people and able-bodied people that say it's a must-have accessory.
Yeah, well, I was going to say anyone with a lathe should definitely get one, because it's just, you butt it up at the end of your piece of work, turn the lathe on, and you can pick the hole you want and just score the...
Yeah, well, obviously, sighted people use a pencil, but I can't use a pencil. That's the only reason I use a score line, to make it tactile. But yeah, it's great for people that just want to mark it with pencil or a Sharpie marker or something. But yeah, it was invented by me, for me. Yeah, the uses for other turns. And obviously, you're going to have people that have been turning, you know, decades, that are so used to using dividers and things like that. That's fine, and I wouldn't expect them or want them to change what they do. But if they've got a complete beginner back in their workshop and they say, all right, well, if you don't want to use these dividers like someone that's been turning for 30 years does, here's the speed sizer. You need that hole. Shove a pencil in it, spin it up, perfectly marked time and time again. So it's safe and repeatable. So it's another way that I can claw back a little bit of time. You know, as soon as I can get a piece finished, you know, I can get it out the door and either go to the customer or it can go to the gallery where it can be exhibited. So again, I'm trying to claw back minutes here, there and everywhere. And that's why, even though I can hollow a bowl out with a bowl gouge, a lot of my bowl hollowing is done with a carbide, because it's quick for me. And they're not idiot-proof. You can still get a catch with carbide and you can still be overzealous, but they are much safer and quicker to use. So, again, I can claw back maybe 15, 20 minutes per project with that. So that equates to money when you're earning a living from it.
Yeah. Well, talking about making a living, where predominantly is most of your work comes from? Is it from your website, from the gallery you...
It has to be the gallery at the moment. Since May last year, I've been exhibiting in a gallery called Taurian Arts in Ashbourne, and the proprietor, Matthew, he's an amazing, amazing guy, encyclopedic knowledge of all forms of art, but he specializes in studio ceramics, some paintings and some studio glasswork as well. But we went in there really as a mistake to purchase something that we subsequently found wasn't a for sale item. It was a display item. Anyway, we got talking and he was asking, you know, where we lived, and we said, oh, well, we've just moved to the Dales a couple of months ago. And he asked me what I did. So I said, well, I'm a wood turner. He went, oh, well, that's interesting. Didn't expect that answer from a blind guy. So yeah. I pulled out my phone and showed him some pieces of my work on my phone. And he went, oh, my Lord, we need to speak. So I said, what? He said, I've been after a wood turning artist for years and no one's really done it for me, certainly no one locally. So he said, could you bring in some pieces of your work so I can have a look at? So I took in 6 pieces, which he kept and subsequently sold. And I am now the biggest selling artist in the gallery. It's really weird. I have to pinch myself when I think about it. I'm the biggest selling artist, both in volume, not in price, but I'm pretty close up there. I've sold a couple of pieces in there now for £1,000.
Wow. And what were they?
I turned a large ammonite sculpture and made the base for it. That went for £1,000. So there was that, and many of my pieces have gone for many hundreds of pounds. I'm starting to be collected now by art collectors and obviously signing and dating every piece so it has provenance. And the bowl that I turned for the Google shoot as well, that went for £850. So someone that bought that is a serious art collector and loved the design that I'd done, a dandelion design and some autumnal colours. So, it's been great. And this is, since moving to the countryside, we have sold more pieces than I could have ever wished for, at good money as well, but they get it here. They appreciate it. But since going the abstract, true artist sort of way, my work has become a lot more sought after, like I say, especially the abstract stuff.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So it sounds like it was luck. You went into the store and you got chatting.
Complete
for anyone wanting to get their work into galleries. Mm. Is that what you'd recommend? Just going to galleries and just talk to people? Do you have any advice?
Yeah. If you want to get your pieces into a gallery, first approach them and show them, take a piece or at least have some video or photographs on your phone. Be prepared for a knockback. I was lucky I hit gold straight away with Matthew, but other wood turners that I've spoke to, prepared for a knockback, and they will be honest with you. If you take a piece in and they think it's not right, they'll tell you.
Yeah.
So your ego in the early days can take a bit of a dent because you thought, oh, wow, that's great. That's the best thing I've ever turned. You take it in there and they go, not feeling it. You go, no, but it's really great. And they go, yeah, well, I know my clients and they just won't go for that. So be prepared for that as well. But persevere and also be aware that you are going to have to pay a commission, which can initially sound, wow, that's a lot. But when you factor in their expertise, they have to market and sell that piece. It's worth every penny. And when your work is going for gallery prices, you're earning much more, even after paying the commission, than you would have ever have done just selling a 30 quid bowl at a Christmas fair.
Yeah.
Because we tried that in the early days. We'd be there with beautifully turned and carved pieces that I'd done, and people saying, that's amazing, and oh, wow, your story is incredible, and oh, wow, how much you owe? You want £150 for that? No, can't do it. And they go next door and buy some raffle tickets. So to get yourself in a really top-end gallery will pay dividends. So don't give up. Stick with it. You will get there. But also promote yourself. Sell yourself. If you've got confidence in what you're capable of and you believe in your work, it will happen.
Yeah, that's really good advice. Now, we're drawing to an end here, but I do want to ask one more question.
Mm-hmm.
Because I hear, you know, you're dabbling in a bit of TV for money for nothing. Can you tell us about that? Because that sounds really exciting.
Yeah, well, I've done a fair bit of filming. Just give, again, the listeners a bit of a history. You know, I've been featured on BBC News North West and BBC Radio Manchester and That's Lancashire and various publications, Wood Turning Magazine and Sunday Morning Live. And then last year, a film crew came out and did a documentary called Blind Ambition about some blind artists. So I was featured on that. And then there was the Google film, which was just mind-blowing. Google sent out a production crew of 12 people.
Wow.
The director was flown in from Canada, Toronto. The cinematographer, Alfred, was flown in from Montpellier, south of France. There were Panavision, Panalux vans parked on the road. They were using top-end movie-quality kit. Alfred was using Stanley Kubrick's old lenses, which were worth £300,000 just for the lens.
Wow.
And there was satellite uplink to LA, so the producer for Google in LA could watch, you know, real-time at 2 in the morning back over there, and they were signing scenes off. They shadowed us all week, Nicola and I in the car, at the gallery, at the sawmill, picking some bowl blanks up, and that was amazing. And they were here for about 10 days, got 24 hours of film for a 4-minute final finished product. But I think that's nudging 1 million views now on Google. Yeah. And of all the short films they've done on their makers, I think last time I heard that was the most successful short film they'd done of that type.
Yeah.
The views were amazing. And then last summer I was contacted by the producers of the Money for Nothing show. And they were interested in securing a wood turner for the show. And they love my story and the inspiration it could give to others, and arranged for me to have a casting interview. So basically, you know, you're asked a load of questions and then that goes to one of the executive producers. So it wasn't like they just come to me. You're in the mix with other creators. So it's not a given that I'll get it. But they came back and said, no, you've got the gig. So I started filming last year, summertime, late summer, and up to date, we've got two episodes filmed and completed now. My episodes start getting aired this autumn, and it's great to meet the show host, Sarah Moore, who a lot of people know who she is. It's a very successful show on BBC One. So I've met Sarah and also one of the other presenters, JJ, who is a former Royal Marines commando who was severely injured, almost to the point of death in Afghanistan, and survived, went through the whole surgery and rehab, and his arms are disfigured now. But, you know, he took up woodworking as well. So that's how he's, you know, made it onto the show, as this really accomplished disabled woodworker. And he was on Strictly Come Dancing as well, JJ. He's very good friends with Prince Harry, and he's played in the Invictus Games. So, yeah, it's brilliant. You know, I love having the production crews around here because it's really interesting for me. And they let me touch the cameras and all the equipment. And it's fascinating. And it's a long, hard day when you can't see because it's mentally exhausting just doing normal things when you can't see. So it is very, very tiring, but it's a lot of fun. And they're so nice and so kind. And it's funny when they just drop a huge lump of wood on your drive, and then they'll say, like the show, if you're familiar with the show, so have you got any ideas what you could do with that, Chris? Well, how about this or that? That sounds interesting. How much is it going to cost us? Well, do the whole thing for about £350. Sounds great. And then they'll start filming you at the beginning of the project, and then they come back then for some finishing shots and the reveal.
Yeah.
But, luckily for me, everything I've turned for the show is already sold, but I'm not going to give too much away. You'll have to watch it in autumn.
Yeah.
But everything I've turned is sold already.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I'm definitely looking forward to seeing that, and I'm sure the listeners are as well. So before we end it, can you just let the listeners know where everyone can find you?
You can find me Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. So it's either at Blind Wood Turner or The Blind Wood Turner. I'm on TikTok as Chris Fisher RPT. I think I'm on there as. Get in touch. We've got a website, theblindwoodturner.co.uk. So, yeah, there's lots and lots of ways. Social media, yeah. All the usual outlets. Yeah, I'm all over the place.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to me today. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, thanks for asking me. Say hello to everyone there. And as always, it's been a hoot and a half hanging out with you guys. So thank you so very much.
Okay, thank you, Chris.
Cheers. See you. Bye.
Join us again next time for another episode of Out of the Woodwork. For more episodes, to listen and subscribe, search for Out of the Woodwork on all major podcast sites, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. For more woodworking project guides, demos, tools, reviews, and more, visit www.axminstertools.com.